Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Two phenomenal guests today. They are the co-hosts of the Knuckleheads podcast, Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles. The fellas just celebrated their 100th episode as podcasters. They had Vince Carter on for the occasion. Their show is always excellent. They get incredible guests, everyone from Shaq and Dr. J to Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Derek Jeter, Sue Bird. If you are not already subscribed to the Knuckleheads podcast, I encourage you to go do so. You can find it on all the usual platforms. We had a great time reminiscing about their start in the NBA with those early 2000s Clippers, a super talented and young squad that was so much bigger culturally than competitively. That era was really only 2 years, if you count the time that Darius Miles was there before he was traded. So it was two seasons, didn't have a winning record, didn't make the playoffs, but they were young and brash and fun as hell. They had Lamar Odom and Elton Brand, Corey Maggette, and of course, our guys, Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles, and they just kind of captured the imagination. There was a moment. There was a Clippers moment. It was fleeting, but it was there, and it was really fun. It was really enjoyable to go back down memory lane about all that. That is also, of course, the team that spawned the iconic two fist taps to the head celebration that you've seen Q and Darius do, or if you weren't there, go find it on YouTube. There's plenty of footage. That's, of course, how these guys came to name their show, the Knuckleheads Podcast. Where did that gesture come from? What does it mean? It was a mystery for a very long time. They will explain. We also hit on a bunch of other topics, including Dylan Brooks' flagrant foul of Gary Payton II the other night. Was the play dirty, just reckless? Both Q and Darius had a very strong opinion on the matter. Before we get to all that, a quick reminder, please rate, review, subscribe to the Crossover wherever you get your podcasts, and hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my chat with Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now very pleased to be joined by a couple of NBA legends and a couple of certified knuckleheads, a term that I would not use if they didn't call themselves that themselves. Quentin Richardson, Darius Miles, gentlemen, welcome.
Man, thank you.
No, I appreciate you being here on the occasion of your 100th episode of the Knuckleheads podcast. Congrats on 100. The 100th episode, of course, is a two-parter with Vince Carter. I guess that means it's the 100th and 101st episode. The math is complicated.
Just, chopped it in half, making it a little more special.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Put a little sauce on it.
Love it. I want to talk about the podcast. I want to talk about your Clipper days. I want to talk about a bunch of NBA stuff. But before we jump into all that, it is the Knuckleheads podcast for a reason. And those of us who have been covering the NBA or watched the NBA long enough know about the two-fist tap to the forehead. You guys did finally explain it a few years ago in the Players Tribune in the piece that Darius wrote and that Quentin edited. Expert job of editing, Q. Good job.
Thank you, man. I never done that before. That
was for our audience, in case they missed that, because it was an iconic gesture. I think it inspired a lot of stuff that came after. I kind of always thought like Carmelo should have been paying you guys royalties for his three fingers to the dome, because that felt like an offshoot. Either of you want to explain for this audience at least where the two taps to the forehead came from?
It came from when we got drafted. I was still kind of in high school mode, and I was going to the Westchester game, and I used to get Q to go to the Westchester games with me. And the players on the Westchester game was like Trevor Ariza, Asan Adams, you know, Bottoms, and a bunch of them other guys, Bobby Jackson, a lot of Bobby Brown. I'm sorry, I called him Bobby Jackson. My bad. Bobby Brown. And we just used to go to the games, and one of their celebrations was that. That's what used to get their team hype when they was one of the top teams, if not the top team in California at the time. And they just asked us, like, man, in the game, can y'all represent us? Do that when y'all get a dunk or celebrate and stuff like that. So we did it in a game, and that was just that one game. And after that one game, fans just – every time we came back, the next game, fans was like, nah, we need y'all to do that again. And it just stuck with us.
I love that. I love that it was actually Westchester. Shout out to Westchester High. I've got a couple of good friends who went to Westchester High, actually.
High school.
It's amazing that actually, you know, like some anonymous kids invented it, too. Like, I don't know if it was Trevor Ariza or one of his teammates or whatever, but, like, those guys should have got the credit, right? Like, they, you know, you guys ended up doing it in I think it was a Nike commercial. Like, those guys should have had their moment, too, somewhere along the way. But it kind of all got kind of lost in the haze.
I mean, once go ahead, Q.
I think that was kind of why we made sure, we went out our way to make sure that when the story was told, we let it be known that it was their deal. Because, I mean, you know, them being some kids and seeing it go and get as big as it did, you know, you had kids all across the country. And, like, now in hindsight, us, you know, having the knowledge and seeing throwback videos of all type of different kids all over the country doing it, they could have absolutely been like, hey, that's our stuff. But, like, they were totally cool with everything because they knew – you know, the whole way it went down, like D just explained it to us. It came from something organic, us showing love to them. And it just grew into something that we never could even, you know, dreamed of. And to be here 20 some odd years later, and we named the podcast that, and, you know, it's based on a lot of that stuff. So, I mean, it's just crazy the way the whole thing came full circle.
Yeah, and, you know, it didn't have a name until 20 years later. You know, when exactly. We were doing it, it was never called anything.
Yeah.
We was just doing it. So 20 years later, they were like, yeah, so what you call it? And, you know, it wound up being the Knuckleheads, which I'm definitely cool with.
So at the time, I was covering the Lakers back then, and I remember how big that got and how big your teams got for that couple of years, and the Clippers were really busting out with that young crew, with you guys and Corey Maggette and everybody else. And people were theorizing all the time about what does that mean? What are they doing? Why are they tapping you? And I remember somebody, I think maybe wrote like they called it antennas up, as if you guys were like pulling up to antennas on, as if you were like Martians or something.
I never heard that.
No,
I heard the antennas thing before.
I never heard that.
I heard that before.
All right, but you guys were so secretive about it back in the day, which actually I think added to the mystique. That's kind of what the fun was, too. It was like just kind of an inside thing for you guys. But it did spawn all these theories. Do you guys remember what other speculative theories people put on it? What do people think it mean?
Man, people thought it meant signs from the neighborhood. They thought it meant all types of stuff. No lie. They thought it meant like some Chicago, you know, Midwest gang stuff. They thought it meant everything. They thought we were like, it meant we were saying something, like it was a saying. Like it was a lot of like,
it was everywhere. It was all over the board.
Misfires, a bunch of misfires, because it was just
it was nowhere near that. Everything everybody was trying to think about what it was and where it came from, it was nowhere near that.
Yeah.
As is usually the case when we're all just like speculating and taking stabs in the dark.
I remember the first time D said it because we were sitting there and, and somebody asked D, so you going to tell us what it means? He said, he looked at us and said, no, no. So I tell you that I got a key. he said, I got a key. We can't say that. I'm going to tell you that.
It was an interview after the game.
I ain't going to say nothing, but they're going to keep asking. It was literally like it became a thing.
Yeah, it became a thing. Even when we left to other teams, they was asking me when I went around, you asked me what it was, and I still wouldn't tell them. Yeah. So that's what. You know, it was kind of a good thing because now 20 years later, you know, a story is finally told, you know, it get named, it has a title, and it shows how much it is. You see the guys celebrating now, which I feel like it's come from us because it looked like we was having fun when we was out there celebrating and doing this. And a lot of guys weren't celebrating, you know, it was an older league when we got in the league. And a lot of guys weren't celebrating like we were. A lot of guys didn't really like some of the guys didn't like us celebrating because it felt like we were showing off on them. But to see the guys now, and you know, it looked good to see these kids out here having fun and celebrating and doing their thing.
If you guys were going to bequeath the knuckleheads gesture to one team, one squad right now that maybe kind of, you know, encompasses or symbolizes a lot of what you guys were about back in the day with the Clips, like what team would you bequeath it to?
Memphis.
Like Memphis. Yeah.
They the winning version of what we were.
Yeah. They definitely are.
Like they in the playoffs, they really, really, you know what I mean? It's a like D said, it's a testament to where the league was and where it is now. Cause we were saying like they're a group of young guys. Only difference between them and us is that the whole league is like them now. We were one of a kind at our time. We were the only team that had 5, 6, 7, 19, 20.
We were the youngest team ever.
So it's like, you know, you look at them now, they're in a league where it's still some, you know, you got some guys with some veteran in them and some older guys, but like for the most part, the league is 24, 25 and under, you know what I'm saying? Across the board, it's a lot of guys under that age. So it's like, they able to, you know, kind of get in there and do what they're doing.
And I think they like us. I think they got more years than us. They kind of stuck together and they sticking together. So, yeah, I definitely think they like us. I think we would have got to the point of winning like that.
But from the standpoint of, like, they ain't running from nothing. Like, you know, you watched us how, like, we can't say we was winning every game or beating every team, but, like, nobody wasn't scared over here. You know what I'm saying? Like we did whatever.
No, first of all, I love the Grizzlies as being the team. That's kind of the team in the back of my mind I had because like, yeah, they're young and brash and creative and they just enjoy themselves out there. There's kind of an innocence and just this, you know, this boundless enthusiasm. And you're right. They don't back down from anybody as we saw both good and bad over the last couple of games against the Warriors. We'll get back to that in a second. But it didn't last long for you guys. You know, it was funny, guys, as I was preparing for this and just looking at your basketball reference pages and everything, I think about your Clipper teams as like this era. There was this moment where the Clippers broke through, I think really for the first time. And we've had many starts and stops for that franchise since your time, right? It always seems like they're on the verge of something, then it collapses. But with you guys, I remember you guys like jumping on the scores table at one point, I think late in that, maybe it was your first season.
Last game of the season.
That was a 39 win season, I think. Right. And that was like still a losing year, but you guys were so close to the playoffs and you'd captured the imagination of Clipper fans, of LA fans who were not Laker fans, of NBA fans. You'd become this kind of phenomenon. And so it was this moment, and it really only lasted 2 years if you count it from the day that Darius is drafted to the day that you're traded two seasons later. It's amazing to me all these years later to think that that was only a 2-year run. It feels weightier than that.
It definitely do. Like, a lot of people don't really know that. Like, I definitely know because I got traded and I didn't want to get traded. So I definitely remember. But, like, a lot of people remember that because we was all the way at the bottom. When we got to that team, they won 17 games out of 82. We started all the way to the bottom to just get a spark. You didn't see a Clipper jersey nowhere. The whole 90s, some of the 80s, you didn't see nobody wearing a Clipper jersey. And now, like, when we got there, you start seeing the Clipper jersey in all the videos, people wearing the Clipper jersey on all these shows and all this stuff. And, you know, it seemed like it was a lot because it started from nothing to something. But where it's grown to now is just amazing to see.
The thing that's crazy how, it was, like you say, like, it was 2 years. So you got to think about, like, even for me, like, me and D didn't talk about it. Being there during that time and being there for those 2 years, like, we've gone back and been celebrated as, like, part of that, as the faces of that era. And while we were in that, you never could have told us sitting there that this ain't Elton Brand and Lamar Odom team. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, for us to come back in hindsight, in this 2000, what was it, 2018 season, we go there to the Staples Center, and they, you know, they showing the different eras, and when they get to that, they showing this, and me and him more than anything, and they got us there for it. I'm like, we was really sitting there talking. I said, yo, that's crazy that, you know, that, like, out of everything, like, that's the part that they grab hold out of that era, and they, that's the images, us doing the knucklehead.
So that's especially wild. Especially for me, because Q played 4 years, but I only played two. And if anybody see me or know me, or if they remember something, or they like, man, I know you from somewhere, they instantly call out Clipper before any other team I played for. And I didn't play for other teams longer than that.
That's wild. I don't know. Guys, I don't know that there's another version of this, right? There are other teams that have been fun for a short period of time. I mean, I think of even like, right, there's those Sacramento Kings teams, but they had a longer run than that. And they also, of course, went to the conference finals. Like, your team, for a team that, you know, did not make the playoffs, did not produce, like, multiple Hall of Famers or anything. Like, Elton Brand and Lamar Odom obviously both had very successful long careers and were all-stars. It's amazing. I cannot think off the top of my head of another team that kind of captured the imagination in that way and had such a currency just kind of in the culture, right? Like, it you guys made an impression, which is its own point of pride, I would think, still all these years later.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. When you look at that, that's one of the main reasons that we able to do what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? Because it was, you know, like, being to hear peers of ours, you know, like a Jamal Crawford on our show, and he's like, man, like, they was the popular dudes doing what they was doing. Like, everybody wanted to play the way they was playing in LA. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they knew that we was out there having fun. We were really good friends. We all rocked with each other. So it was a different type of vibe. And then to see that go and everybody love it like they did, and then for them to still, like, you know what I'm saying, me and D could be going to the airport, flying somewhere to go do something. It could be like a, you know, 36, 35-year-old dude to come running up, like, dude, like, random guy, like, man, like, when I was in 7th, 8th grade or whatever they're going to say, like, this was, like, everybody, like, you be sitting there looking at him like, yo, this is crazy. Like, just a random, it could be any, like, the thing about it is, it could be anything. It could be an Asian guy, black guy, Indian guy, white guy, it could be anything. And they just be like, dude, you don't even understand my high school team, this team, or whatever teams. They always got a story, and it's like, it's crazy to me that it was really that big of a deal.
Why do you think it ended so soon? And I assumed, like, the easiest answer is Donald Sterling, but
the crazy thing about that is that nobody thought that he would be going first.
I thought, yeah, we thought I was the untouchable out of everybody.
He was the unicorn. He's not going nowhere out of anybody.
Yeah, and that kind of threw everybody off. Did we need a point guard? We needed a point guard because Jeff McGinnis wouldn't come back. And to get Andre Miller, like, Jason Kidd and Andre Miller is the two, when I got to the league, them the two guards I wanted to play with because they passed the best of me. You know what I'm saying? So then I get traded for them. It's like, ah, like, y'all trade me away for the guy that I want to play with. So I ain't understand the move. I ain't understand it. But back then, a lot of people, you know, they weren't. Clippers was like a different team, you know. They was trying to get a different era. But the era, it kept on going. I feel like they had a good team by adding Andre Miller, having Q, stepping Q up to a bigger role, getting to a bigger role, especially with losing me and Lamar Odom. I feel like that was a good move for them.
Yeah, when it initially happened, Howard, I told them to trade me too.
Really?
Me and him had the same agent, Jeff Wexler. I said, hey, nah, tell him to trade me too. I said, I was the one who wasn't even supposed to be here. I had been trying to get traded from the jump because I didn't get to play that much. I wasn't getting a whole lot of playing time my first year. So, like, if I was – no way we thought D would have got traded. Like, he was like, for real. Like, he would have – when that happened, I was like, that was like, okay – now the whole business of everything has came straight to our front door. The business of the NBA, like, this is here. Like, that was like I can remember that. Like, I was pissed.
Yeah. I didn't know how good I had it until I got traded. Like, I didn't know how good I had it until I got traded.
I should explain to people, because Q, you said it. Darius was a unicorn. You would have thought he'd be untouchable. When Darius was drafted third overall by the Clippers in 2001. At that time, that was the highest high school prep to pro player drafted.
Ever.
Kwame was a couple of years later. Mm-hmm. Kwame Brown becomes the first high schooler to go number one overall. So at the time, Darius. Yeah. So Darius, you're the highest prep to pro guy at the time. But also, I remember, like, there were comparisons to KG and you when you were coming out. Tall, long, rangy, guard multiple positions. You know, it's kind of skinny when you came out, you know, but people figured, you know, he's going to grow into it. But that was the comp that people were throwing around a lot. And so, yeah, you would have thought that Darius, you would have been like the foundational player that the Clips would roll with before that trade for Andre Miller.
Yeah, I definitely did. You know, I don't know if Elgin liked me a lot, but, you know, Elgin got rid of him. That's still my guy, though.
Quentin, how good was Darius back then, or what was the potential? And obviously, like, you know, it's years later, the knee injuries obviously, you know, shortened your career, Darius. But like the potential and the time, you know, or the work that you put in early on, Q, could you like tell people what you saw in a young D Miles?
Man, like nobody couldn't check him. Like, you know what I'm saying? He was basically a creative player. You know what I'm saying? And the thing that made him different, like, yeah, he wasn't like a knockdown shooter, like a perimeter threat like that, but he wasn't scared to shoot. And he would make at least one jumper every game, and he would shoot several of them. Like, he wasn't like how you see some of these kids, like, oh, they scared to shoot or back up off. Like, you back up off him, he gonna shoot it. Like, it ain't no hesitation. So it was like, but the thing that made him special, at his 6'9", the ball handle, the handle was out of this world and nobody could contest it. Like, if you put a 6'8", 6'9", 6'10 guy on him, he was around him in a heartbeat and on top of him. Bop, bop, boom, quick. You know what I'm saying? If it was anybody like – so he was a difficult matchup because of his height, size, length, speed. Like, he was like one of the best shot blockers in the league, but he weighed a buck 85 soaking wet. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could lift him up like this, but he had the windshield wiper. He coming out of nowhere. It just looked like long, skinny arms just flying there. And sometimes he'd block a shot with two hands, like block it twice because he up there. He was so athletic, so fast in his first, second jump, all of that different stuff. It was, the combination of it was deadly. And then when they started really playing him, because they started him at the three, letting him handle the ball. So once they put him at the four, and they had them fours, it was curtains. Nobody couldn't keep up with him. Like, I still see highlights right now, and no disrespect to nobody, but when he had Clarence Weatherspoon on that wing in New York, and he hit that boy with the right to left, he for real moved from here to right here. Like, you all the way out my way, being I'm going to just take one more little dribble and just dunk. And it was like, that's how he was doing a lot of them dudes when they got caught up on that wing with him. And God forbid they get caught in the transition, because when he was there, it was really over. He had the Jason Kidd. Remember the Jason Kidd crossover, bro? Just coming real fast.
Full speed. Full speed.
So the prep to pro era, you know, only lasted another, what, like 5 years after that. And now all these years later, they're talking about eliminating the age limit, letting guys come straight from high school again, like you did, Darius. There's also these other, all these new avenues, right? There's the G League Ignite. There's Overtime Elite. Curious for you, Darius, just looking back, do you still feel like that was the right move at the time? Because everybody, of course, they closed the door because they thought, no, you know what? A lot of these kids weren't ready. Maybe they were too skinny. Maybe they were too immature. There's all these, you know, cautionary tales. Do you look back on it still feeling like that was the best move for you? And if you were coming out now, like, do you like these new avenues, the G League Ignite, Overtime Elite, for guys who, you know, you could also like skip, you don't have to go, not only skip college, you can go straight, you know, guys like Scoot Henderson went from his junior year of high school to the Ignite. So there's these different ways of getting to the league now that maybe kind of, you know, offset some of the concerns that people had back in the day. Just curious your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I would do it again if I had a chance to do it. I feel like playing wise, I was definitely good enough to play on the level. I think definitely college would have gave me a little bit more experience, you know, a little bit more discipline, you know, being with a college coach and a college team instead of going straight to the NBA. But I definitely felt game wise, I definitely was ready to jump. The guys these days, man, it's so lovely for them. They can really take their time. You know, you can take your time. You can get paid in high school. You can get paid in college. You can get paid in the G League. So you can kind of take your time. I would probably, if I can't go straight out of high school, straight to the league, I'd probably just go to college because that'll be a bigger spotlight on me for more people to see me than the G League. But I don't want people to take that as a diss to the G League because I love the G League. The G League just saved the NBA in these past pandemic, and the players that they're bringing up out of the G League are some straight ballers, you know, some real ballers. I really be paying attention to them. So I'm not saying like the G League is the wrong place to go. It's just that nowadays you can kind of take your time. You don't got to be in a rush. Some of these kids that in bad situations or their family don't have enough money to even support them to play basketball, now they're in a position where they don't have to rush and they can make them few chips to take their time and prepare and to do it the right way.
Yeah, I hope they take the age limit away. They should have never put an age limit in there.
They should have never put one on there, though.
See, it's like, I feel like now it's a way better situation because, like you say, there's so many other options. Like, you know, if a guy's not ready to go straight to the NBA, but some guys not built for school and college. That's just, you know, The facts. I hope my kids are, but some kids, you know, some guys not made for. They want to get to the, you know, some guys are good enough to where they should be able to go to the NBA right away. So that's why I feel like it shouldn't be an age limit. But then when you take the age limit away, I feel it's in a better situation than it was in the past because, like you say, you got overtime, you got G League, you got, you know, guys, and then the facts, like D-Miles said, guys can get paid in high school and in college. So that changes a lot of people. Nobody ain't got to, you know, back in the day, you used to sometimes have to sell yourself out to even go to college because you need for your family. And, you know, colleges might be paying this person or that person. And so kids would have to do things that could endanger their eligibility. And now they don't even have to worry about any of that. You can start making money in high school. If you're good enough in college, you can make money. So it's no, like D-Miles said, you don't have to, like, put everything in the hyperspeed, put things at risk so that you could try and do things and be able to do for your family and stuff.
Yeah, it's a much more equitable environment now, right? I'm sure still far from perfect. And even if they eliminate the age limit in the next CBA, it'll still be far from perfect. But the fact that guys will have multiple options, multiple paths they can follow and get paid immediately, if they're not NBA ready, body-wise, maturity-wise, game-wise, whatever, they can choose one of these other paths and develop and still get paid but be on their career path instead of having to, you know, contort themselves and, you know, go to college if they didn't intend to be in college and have to worry about all these other aspects. Like, we're far closer to an equitable system here, you know? And a lot of that's not even what the NBA's done. It's what everybody else has done, right? Like, Overtime Elite is outside the NBA, although David Stern was an investor, I believe. You know, the Australia League has had played a role in this as well. So it's definitely seems like a healthier environment.
I you know, what I think about is like, you know, some of them guys that was big time superstars, the big time legends and myths in high school, and they just didn't make it all the way to the NBA, like the Shea Cottons, the Lenny Cooks and all them. Like, they put in a lot of work and they got a lot of people, a lot of money by filling up a lot of stadiums and doing all that stuff. But now these kids, now they can benefit off that. Even though they might not make it to the NBA, they went through a path of where they was making some cash for their basketball, for their skill. So that's what I really love about it. Like, them guys that really was the man and they were the top players, but they just didn't get all the way to the NBA, but they filled all them seats and put hundreds of thousands of people in seats to come see them play, and they didn't get a dime from it. You know what I'm saying? But nowadays, they're going to get something out of it.
For sure. All right, I want to fast forward back to the present. We touched on the Grizzlies earlier. We were taping this on Wednesday, so we're not that far removed from the Dillon Brooks play against Gary Payton II. I'm curious for both of you guys, as former players, this obviously created quite an uproar in the moment. Steve Kerr called it a dirty play. He was pretty passionate and pretty heated about it after the game, too. I don't know where the line is between careless versus reckless versus dangerous versus dirty, which feels like a fairly loaded word. So curious what both of you guys thought of the Dillon Brooks flagrant two, and where is that line between aggressive hard playoff foul versus reckless versus dirty?
Yeah, it wasn't a clean play. He winded it up. Like, somebody can actually get hurt by him doing that. Do I feel like he's a dirty player and all that? His intent was that? No, I don't think his intent was for him to fall like that and fracture his elbow. His instant reaction after he hit him was jumped straight to him. Yeah. That tells, like, oh, shit, I meant to hit him hard, but not that hard where I knocked him off his stuff. And, you know, like, it depends. Like, it's a thin line, because some people throw elbows and it might be a light elbow. I can either take it serious or I don't. Some people throw a hard elbow. Like the elbow on Draymond Green, I don't think he intentionally hit Draymond Green in his eye. But shit, once you get hit in your eye, I don't care if you intentionally did it or not. I'm pissed about it. You know what I'm saying?
I don't want to say it's dirty, because, like I say, for me to say it's dirty, I have to feel that you intentionally, you know, you did this and you did it with intent to harm me.
Yeah.
I don't think that was his intent. Now, I will say this. It was reckless. And when I say this, I don't mean it like you're dumb, but it's a stupid play. I don't mean it like you're dumb, but you know what I'm saying?
First quarter.
I don't care what quarter it is. When you see somebody going that fast and jumping that hard and him coming from where he's coming from, that is an out of control, dangerous play. Because he's coming from so far behind and he's hustling so hard, your likelihood of doing what you're actually trying to do is way off base, because you just running out like a bat out of hell. This guy's running and he's loading up to really go up. So that impact is not good. It's out of control. It's wild as hell and it's unsafe. That's what we would call, like, that's like somebody trying to, just as bad would be him trying to run out of nowhere and take the charge. That's just as stupid, because you have no chance of actually, you're gonna clip him and flip him over. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I would say, like, when I was growing up, we would say, that's a stupid play. Like, why would you do that? Like, you're going to hurt somebody like that. Like, you got no real chance of really making a great defensive play. Like, it's everything that comes after what you're doing is about to be bad. Like, that's what we as players have seen over and over. And I guarantee you the guys on that bench was like, that was dumb as hell. Like, why would he do that? Like, and that's where you get angry at. That's why I say, I'm not going to say, when I say dumb and stupid, I don't mean like he's a dumb and stupid player. I'm like, that wasn't a smart play. Like, you couldn't have thought, like D-Man said, winding up like that from that far back, you could have, like, okay, you hit him in the head, but he could have hit him in the whole body and just took him off. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you ain't, likelihood of you doing what you're trying to do is not high.
And he's no better than that. He's a valuable player. that him taking that risk of doing that, ejecting them from the game, and they already down one game at home to that. Like, if Ja Morant didn't go off on that, they need you out there to play your defense and do what you bring to the table. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't say he's a dirty player or that. That's just one, like you said, that's one to play. And especially to me, it's first quarter. And look, like you're so valuable first quarter. You don't need to even get a foul in the first quarter because we need you all game. But so he's already got a layup. He's already got a layup. Nobody's down there with him.
And this is why I say it's stupid, because like you said, like, forget about the ejection and him. Like, what about GP? He done. Fractured elbow. Yeah. Like, you just messed up my man's. Like Steve Kerr said, this is a dude who's been trying to find his way in the league. He get on the team. He's found his niche. This is his time to really, like you say, have the time of his life. You in the playoffs. You're getting to play. You guarding, like, the other team's best player. You
best player.
Impact player. And then this dumbass play you make, you got my whole – it's over with for me, maybe. Like, because you just came and did a ridiculous play. That's crazy.
Yeah. No, it's really sad for GP as well, for everything that Steve Kerr said afterward. You know, the guy's been bouncing around the league. He's 29, I think. Exactly. Multiple teams, finally found a niche, was having a great season. It's sad. All right, before I leave that topic, I just want to ask then, I agree with you guys. Like, it's reckless, but not dirty. Dirty seems to imply something else. Dirty seems to imply intent. So where is the line? What crosses over into dirty, or what qualifies as dirty?
To me, dirty would have been if he made that play and then he, like, you know, like, the opposite of what he did. He went to try and help him up or whatever. Like, if he would have did that and, like, showed no remorse and, like, walked off snarling at him or something like that, to me, then it's dirty. Like, if he's, like, looking at him while he's down and he don't care. That mean I meant to, like, I wanted to get you good. And whatever happened after that, I didn't care. But the fact, like he said, it was simultaneous. As he did it, he was like, oh, he knew that he did something bad. He tried, like, that's why I don't want to say he was dirty. It was a dirty, messed up play, but I don't think that was his intent. I don't think he's a dirty player. I think it just happened that way because he was doing something that was reckless.
Yeah. And I'm sure he regretted it immediately, but it's, you know, you got to know. Yeah, right. Like, you got to know in the moment. You got to have that control. You got to know what you're doing. And I know everything's moving 1,000 miles an hour, but
as a player, though, we've been in those situations, and you've seen as a writer and a beat writer, you've seen guys maybe, oh, okay, just don't even take the swipe on this and just let him go because he's out of reach. No coach is going to yell at you for that or nothing, because everybody is coherently knowing you can't do anything but something crazy here. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they was trying to say Draymond's a dirty player. Draymond made sure that boy didn't hit his face on the ground.
He could have let him go.
He could have just let him go and yanked his arm away from him and just let him hit his face. He made sure he didn't hit his face on the ground. Yeah, it was a hard foul, but
my thing.
Yeah, I make sure you ain't finna hit your face on the ground and mess your
stuff. If he really pulled him, everything would have just crashed.
Yeah, his legs would have went up and his face would have went down.
I think that broke the fall and made it a little less, like, where he didn't get hurt. He could have hurt, like, that could have been a neck injury or anything, and he really pulled him down face first like that.
I thought Draymond should have been a flagrant one, not a two. What did you guys think?
One.
I definitely thought it should have been a one. I definitely thought he shouldn't have got ejected for it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like the NBA, like, there's these last few years, they're really trying to, like, legislate out all this stuff, but they don't know where the line is themselves, and it feels like it moves around a lot. I don't want to say I was surprised, given where things have been in the league the last couple of years. I wouldn't necessarily shocked, but I did think it was overzealous by the officials, and I thought it would be downgraded the next day to a one, and they didn't. So
yeah, I thought it was going to be downgraded. I was surprised that it did. Yeah.
Nobody—that's the problem, though, right? Like, none of us know anymore. You know, like, what's a one? What's a two? What's a common foul? Like, it's
it's as much as I criticize the refs. Like, man, they have one of the toughest jobs in the world.
They do,
you know, and I try to, you know, sometimes just bag up off them. Like, man, it's hard to decipher and see everything on this court. Yeah, the cameras can see it all, but these three guys on the court can't see it all. So we got to kind of accept that of what it is. It's, you know, different game. I hate that they try to take the emotion out, because I love the emotion, the fire, just long as they keep their emotions in check.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's something that they're still the NBA, I feel like, is still struggling with too, is where the line on all that. You know, the best lesson I ever got about officiating, Darius, you just kind of alluded to this in a way. I was at they used to do this media day when referees had their referee training camp. And Ronnie Nunn, when he was the head of the officials, used to put on the program. And he was referring to how at home and on the broadcast, they'll be talking about like, oh, well, this was obviously goaltending because here you can see it's still over the cylinder or whatever. And Ronnie Nunn said, well, that's great, but I don't have a referee sitting on top of the backboard looking down at the cylinder.
Exactly.
You got a camera there.
Right.
And just like, that's not for all situations, but that example alone, I think, taught me way back when, like, oh yeah, before we jump to conclusions about what they saw, didn't see, what they missed, didn't miss, we're watching at home in high def on 65-inch screens. There's three refs. They do not have the angles that we do most of the time. And no, they're not perched on top of the backboard.
I was a master of disguise. It was a lot of holding and grabbing. They had to get on a couple of them steals that they just didn't see. And then when the guy back there complaining, like, he grabbed me, I'm already down court dunking that thing. So, you know, it's a gift and a curse.
A few more before I get you guys out of here. I know Q's got some stuff to get to also. 100 episodes, we said, of the Knuckleheads pod. And your guest list has been, like, just phenomenal. Steph has been on there. KD, Shaq, Dr. J, Oscar Robertson, George Gervin, Jason Tatum, T-Mac, on and on. Derek Jeter, Sue Bird. There's a lot of players and former players now in this space, and I get the distinct feeling that players prefer to talk to other players or former players than talking to, like, ink-stained wretches like me. There's a different vibe, and I feel like you guys, the conversations you get into, do you notice that, like, that there is maybe an instant comfort level? Not just like some of these guys are saying yes to you, who I probably would have a harder time getting, but that the conversation is just different because you're talking as peers.
Yeah, I definitely think that's it. We talking as brothers, part of a brotherhood, a sisterhood too, because we do the WNBA players. And just in sports all general, I'm a player first person. Like, I'm always on the player side until otherwise. So to have a responsibility, has this changed into a responsibility for me? Like, it's an amazing thing for me to just be representing these former players, these current players in the right way.
Did you guys have any sense before you got into this? Like, this has been around, you guys have been doing this for 3 years now. Did either of you see yourself? I mean, podcasting didn't exist, obviously, during your careers, but even as broadcasters, and not just as broadcasters, you're not just like doing the, okay, former player does commentary in the studio or something. You are hosting, you are being the journalist, you're doing the interviews. Did either of you ever see yourselves doing this? Darius is shaking his head no.
Nah, I mean, like, the way it all came about, like he said, when I did the executive co-writer or whatever for his thing, I had done my story before that. But then when I sat alongside and we were doing his thing and I was a guest editor or whatever, they just saw the chemistry and they saw, like, a true friendship. Like, we've been knowing each other over 20 some years, however long it's been, and it's like, you know, jokes back and forth, and they saw the chemistry and they was just like, you know, trying to figure out this and that. And I think it kind of shook out, you know, with us talking to Chris Bernard, kind of just shook out to like, all right, let's try this as the podcast. Like, the only thing I had ever done with podcasting before that was like a little small thing in the finals with Jared Jeffries and Al Harrington, but that was with the Players Tribune too, and I didn't even remember what it was. I didn't even know it was a podcast at the time, to be honest. Like, I didn't know what a podcast was, but I thought we just did like a little recording, you know what I'm saying? He sent me to a little studio out here. I did it, whatever. It was cool. And I didn't know it was a podcast. I still, like, we didn't know the icon on the phone. We didn't know none of that. Like, the first time, like, when we first started doing it, we just, you know, we sat down and talked about it, like, all right, if we're going to do anything in this space and do it, like, we're not going to be the guys to get up there as the ex-players and talk about guys. We're going to get up here and we're going to celebrate each other. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's enough. It's a million different Twitter feeds and sites and everything that's dedicated to highlighting all of the bad stuff about all of us. And they do an excellent job at throwing it on out there. So it's like, when you come on our show, we want you to feel the love. We don't, you know, obviously we're not ignorant to the fact that none of us are perfect, but like, we're going to say that for them to talk about. We're going to talk about everything that we love about you, your game, how cold you was, whatever you did that we admire. We're going to talk about all those things. And that's just the way we want to do it.
I know you guys told The Athletic earlier this week that your dream guest is Michael Jordan. That's an easy one, obviously, to be top of the list. What would you guys, what's the first question or the biggest question you would want to ask MJ?
The same one we ask everybody. Tell them, Black.
Who the first person to bust his ass?
Yeah, that's what we want to hear. Who gave MJ the business first?
Who the first person gave you that work?
That's a good question. I'm sure that's, he must have talked about that somewhere, right? Somewhere back in the day. I don't know what the answer to that is.
I don't know. MJ let that cat out of the bag.
I'm an MJ aficionado. I ain't never heard that story yet to who tuned MJ up first. And that's my boy, that's his first question every time. And I can't, if we get him, that's the most anticipated one ever.
I would love to hear that. Whoever that person is, though, I do not envy them, because I'm sure MJ has found various ways to torture, taunt, whatever he's done since then.
That's the follow-up question
that we don't give everybody.
What happened to him for the rest of his career against you?
Every time you've seen him, what did you do to him?
I'm just going to guess whoever it is, it did not end well for that person.
Yeah, it didn't. He's determined.
All right, well, MJ on the Knuckleheads podcast, I will look forward to that one. I'm sure you guys will get, you're all brand Jordan, right? So he's got to do you that solid, right?
Yeah.
Definitely Jordan representative.
Look forward to that one. Look forward to all the rest. Look forward to your next 100 episodes on the Knuckleheads, which folks can, of course, find in all the usual places where you find podcasts. Quentin Richardson, Darius Miles, this has been a blast, man. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Yes, sir. Appreciate
Thank you. It. Check out that 100 episode. VC, have man, have amazing.
Yes. And today is May the 4th. May the 4th be with you, truly.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles. Thanks to Sydney Northcutt and Paige Graham for connecting us. Thank you to our producer, Shelby Royston, and thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.